Yes, I'm doing the book review this afternoon. The thriller is a new one by Ian Rankin, and that is always something for me to celebrate, a new John Rebus. And in this one, John is moving house. He's not leaving the building, but he's moving down onto the ground floor because he has chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and so he can't climb stairs anymore. And while that is happening and his life is being turned around by that, he gets a call from his daughter Samantha in the dead of the night. Her husband has been missing for 2 days, and he decides to go down and get involved. The husband is found. He is dead. Rebus knows that his daughter is going to be the prime suspect, and information starts to emerge about troubles in his daughter's relationship with her late husband, which again make it extremely likely that the police are going to try and fit her up. And he can't quite bring himself to say to her, "Samantha, I know that you are not guilty." And she senses that, and they were not particularly close because he was always more devoted to his cases than he was to his family. And she senses that he is not unequivocally on her side, that he remains a policeman rather than being a father, and that drives a further wedge between them. And then while all of that is happening, he drives towards the windswept coast where this is happening. And while that is happening down there, there is another murder which is being dealt with in Edinburgh, and his longtime sidekick Siobhan Clark is dealing with that and trying to help him out up on the west coast of Scotland. And these two plots seem as if they might end up as one, that there might be links between the two murders, and I'm not going to tell you whether they are or not. I'll just tell you that it's typically easy and enjoyable to read. Every John Rebus has thrilled me as much as the previous. This one is called A Song for the Dark Times. And then the more serious novel is an English translation of one of Japan's more currently celebrated female novelists. And not too many of those female novelists have been translated into English. This one is by a writer called Miko Kawakami, and it's called Breasts and Eggs. And it's kind of in two parts. And the first is a novella which was written 8 years ago, and then the second is an embroidering on the facts and themes of the characters of that novella. And the initial part is the central character is an author called Natsu, and her sister Makiko has traveled to Tokyo from Osaka to consult a doctor about breast augmentation, which is a subject that Makiko has deeply researched and which she expounds on at great length. And she's got her daughter with her, and her daughter Midoriko is absolutely disgusted about what her mother is contemplating. And then the second part of the novel, it's Natsu, who is in the grip of an obsession. She's single. She's desperate to have a child. She doesn't want to have sex. Having sex does not work for her, so she gets into what is a very labyrinth-like bureaucracy of sperm donation in Japan. And it's much more discursive than the much more tightly focused first part. It's not a book that is for everybody, but it is a book that I found fascinating because it is a rare female voice about a topic which is not much discussed in literature in Japan, the topics of breasts and eggs. And I found it powerfully written and very interesting. But there's a little thing about translation. This is a translation by two people, Messrs. Bett and Lloyd. And this is how they translate one of the sentences. "I've been thinking about getting breast implants." And in the Osaka dialect in which the book is written in Japanese, another translation is, "I'm thinking of getting me boobs done." Not my boobs, but me boobs. Because apparently Osaka dialect is a bit like Manchester dialect. It's rough, it's friendly, outspoken. And there's a kind of cleaning up in this non-use of the Osaka dialect. Midoriko, the teenager who's repulsed by her mother's desire for surgery, in the version that I read, "It's gross. I really don't understand. It's so gross. She's being an idiot, the biggest idiot." The other translation, which tries to render in English Osaka dialect, goes, "I don't get it. Puke, 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 puke. She's off her trolley, my mum. Daft, balmy, bonkers, thick as two short planks. And you see the incredible difference between the rendering from Japanese of those two English versions. But there we go. And then non-fiction, I have been reading and thoroughly enjoying Sam Harris's Making Sense. What he's done is he's been making these Making Sense podcasts for quite a few years now. And what he's done is select 13 of those conversations, and he sent the audio to the person with whom he was talking and said, do you want to clean it up a bit and make any little edits? And he's done that with his own contributions. He's then sent it to the what do you call them, conversant, and then he's printed it. And I'm not somebody who listens to podcasts. Again, I'm not entirely sure why, but I just don't. And so I felt really privileged to be let into these 13 conversations on consciousness, morality, and the future of humanity. And in a world which is so disputatious, a world in which rage is the first sort of tactic of engagement, intellectual engagement, and there's so little listening and so much shouting, to have public conversation in this measured, thoughtful, listening kind of way. I think it's an extraordinary volume of intelligent, deeply intelligent conversation. Sam Harris, Making Sense, Conversations on Consciousness, Morality, and the Future of Humanity. One of the conversations with an African-American academic called Glenn C. Lowry, which is about Black Lives Matter and police brutality and racism in America, I found particularly pertinent to our situation and trying to understand better what's going on in America.